This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Oh boy, what happened to my voice? Hi, this is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the absolutely perfect place to live and the perfect place for writers to write and readers to read a good book. Oh boy, it is such wonderful weather here in Florida. I just love it. And I am so happy that we have on the program today our legal eagle, Bill Larson, because there's lots to talk to him about. Intellectual property. Oh, there's been a lot in the news. Hi, Bill. How are you?
Morning. How are you doing?
Okay, great. Oh, wow. Oh my. I've been reading so much, and I have to check with you. Okay, you have to tell me before I say another word about a story that I want to talk about. Am I allowed on air, live on air, to call somebody an idiot? Could they sue me?
Yeah, they could. That could be considered a...
That's an insult.
Yeah, it could be a slander.
A slander? Oh, yeah. So I can't say that about anybody.
No, it's not a good idea.
So I have to be really, really careful. Okay, well, I will be really, really careful.
So slander involves saying something about a person, either that they have a disease or a mental problem or they're a crook or something like that, and that can cause a lawsuit for slander.
Okay. Well, I don't want to get involved in lawsuits.
Nope.
I've supported enough lawyers over the years.
Take it from a trial lawyer. You don't want to be involved in litigation.
Exactly. So I will not say that about anybody. It can be in my head, right? Nobody can sue me for what's in my head.
Can't sue you for thinking.
Okay, well, I'm thinking. but I want to talk not about that subject. I want to talk actually about somebody who is very, very lucky. And this is a young man, and I think you've heard this story. Wow. There is a lawsuit going on. Well, there's a couple of very interesting lawsuits going on. And let's talk maybe first about the one that so many of my listeners have written in, and they've asked me for your comments about the Nirvana lawsuit, because many people, of course, have that album. And I am one of them. I have that album of Nevermind. And so
famous cover art.
And I'm so glad I have it. And whoa, what is going to happen with this lawsuit? Explain what's going on.
Well, the claim is that the individual who appears as a 4-month-old in the swimming pool and is also naked, his parents entered into a contract with Nirvana or a friend to take the photograph and sell it to them for the cover art. And now he's arguing that the contract was insufficient and he didn't was posed in a way now that's causing him embarrassment and shame. And so he's looking for compensation.
Well, now this is 30 years after the cover came out. It was very, very successful. I think just in the first month or 2 months, it sold like 300,000 copies. It is, of course, that famous picture of a baby in a pool chasing a dollar bill. And
right. And
so the young man, he's trying to get some money from these people. And first of all, what do you think of the lawsuit? Is he going to win?
I think it'll be settled before it goes to court. I think it's a case about money, obviously. Whether or not he's been posed in a bad light, I don't know. I think it would be difficult to make the argument that you could recognize him from the baby picture. You know, he made himself famous that way. He made some arguments that it shamed him. That could be a tough argument too. Some have said, oh, it's pornography. It's not pornography because there's no sexual act involved. It's just a photograph
of a little baby. And, you know, at the time, of course, when it came out, it never occurred to me. But I also did not realize that it was an anti-capitalist cover, because this baby apparently is chasing the dollar bill because he's a wicked capitalist. So maybe maybe you could sue on that basis. But sure
they'll end up getting a little money out of it. It'll settle because they need it to go away. It's a moneymaker for both sides because it gets the album back in front of everybody, so sales will probably go up. And now he's put himself in the light, so he'll get some fame and he'll probably get some money out of it. So probably both sides will make money out of it.
Yeah, because it is a lesson. It is a lesson to everybody. You know, first of all, this Nirvana has been on Billboard for, I think, 335 weeks in the top 200 for all these years. I mean, you know, that's a lot of weeks. And so they're making a lot of money. And when this idea, you know, their parents were asked to, you know, let them use their child, it seemed simple enough. And Kurt Cobain apparently said, you know, oh, you know, a little few minutes, you're going to make $250. Which in those days, probably to that family, thought, well, that's a lot of money. They never thought what could happen with that cover. And over the years, it seems to me, if they had been nice, they should have given this kid money years ago, paid for his college.
These stories are replete in the music business and photographs and stuff, where bands have used either choruses or people to help them with background singing. They come into the studio, they pay them $100. And, you know, that part of the song or the photograph goes on to incredible fame. And they feel that they didn't get paid enough. Well, they only come to that realization after the photograph or the music actually becomes very popular. There's thousands of others that don't. So it's really, it's all about the money.
Yeah. And, I think, you know, as you said, they're going to settle it because that's what they do. But it's... also, an interesting concept for, you know, authors who are thinking about using pictures of their kids on a book, maybe to double think that. Maybe you know.
Well, it's okay to do that. What you need to do is register as a copyright the photograph. So you take that photograph and you upload it to the copyright office and pay your $50 registration fee and register the photograph. And now it's yours for 100 years. And if anybody takes it, you've got a really great lawsuit.
Oh, exactly. And speaking of lawsuits, oh boy, this is one that is going to really be a big thing in the art world. Have you heard about the loss? Well, I guess it's going to be a lawsuit for Jasper John.
No, I haven't heard about that one.
Okay. Well, you know, this is... I'm a little bit of an artist. I call myself a little bit of an artist. I've done quite a lot of work over the years. As a matter of fact, one of my watercolors won a watercolor contest. It was first prize, and I had based it on a photograph I saw in a book, and my watercolor is actually fantastic. I mean, it is really, really a prize-winning watercolor. But of course, I didn't have permission from the photographer or from the company that, you know, published the book. And it's a very old book. Perhaps at the time I painted it, it was still under, you know, copyright. But it was in Europe, a European book, so I never even thought to get... I mean, I just painted it for fun. I never even expected to win a prize. But my teacher put it into the contest, and I won. And at first, I actually sold one Giclée copy of it. But then I realized I don't have permission. And it's like, oh, I don't want to go through a big hassle. But if you do something like that, if you, you know, paint a picture based on... a photograph, what What does it mean?
Well, if you have a painting that's based on a photograph or a photograph on a painting, vice versa, it's called a derivative work. It means that the work is derived from an earlier work. And so if you create a derivative work, you can get a copyright registration in that, but it could be dominated by the underlying original copyright. So even though you can stop other people from copying your piece, you can't necessarily sell it. And it's in a really weird law of how an earlier copyright, and the same goes for patents, an earlier work will dominate one later if the second one is based on the first.
Well, and you know, for authors, and many of them do their own covers, this is a complicated situation. Now, talking back about Jasper Johns, who actually I met one time at a museum. Jasper Johns, of course, is a brilliant artist, famed. His paintings, can sell for $10 million. I don't know if you're familiar with his work, and some people aren't, although, you know, I think he is perhaps one of the, maybe he's the highest selling author, artist, living artist. But all of his work is based on he does a lot of American flags, he does a lot of maps of the United States, he does a lot of things. Anyway, it just came out the other day that he was in his doctor's office. He saw a drawing on the wall, which was of a knee surgery, and he liked it, and he used it in one of his works. Now, the artist is a kid, 17 years old, who did a very nice drawing of knee surgery. Obviously, a talented young kid. But Jasper Johns took this art, and he created a major piece of work out of it, which, of course, is going to sell for millions of dollars. Why? At what point?
Have a stake in that claim, because if the second work is derived from the first, then the original author, the original painter, the original photographer, is the owner of that and owner of the derivative right.
Exactly. The kid, the 17-year-old kid who did this drawing, and it's a nice drawing. It's a kind of drawing that medical students would do.
It's essentially copyright infringement. If you take somebody else's work and you use that as a basis to create another work, what we call a derivative work, then that's an infringement of the underlying work.
Well,
basic copyright law.
So I think this kid who comes from Cameroon, he came to America from Cameroon. His father works in a supermarket filling shelves. And, got him to the United States to study. And just from that one, taking that drawing of his, I don't understand. Wouldn't most artists understand? Even, I understood that I couldn't go ahead and sell those, my painting, my watercolor.
Yeah. And if I had the answer for why people do things that end up in court, I'd, get the Nobel Prize, but I can't. And every day I shake my head at things people do, and I say, well, you got yourself in a bunch of trouble now.
Yeah, well, Jasper Johns is definitely in trouble. And the funny thing is, apparently we'll see, but apparently all the people involved in the whole showing of the event of the new painting, we're also somehow aware of this kid, I would say
it'll
this kid
eventually work its way out through money. All of these cases always do.
Yeah,
in the end, he'll end up getting payment and also probably attribution, and then hopefully that'll help his career. But these 99 out of 100 of these type of cases never reach the courtroom. They're always settled out of court. It's just there's no real value. Of taking it to a jury in almost all cases. So it'll probably end up in a settlement.
And I have a feeling it's also going to end up on the big screen, because this is going to make one heck of a movie. I tell you, I could already write the screenplay for that movie. Just, it's, you know, a story for, you have some kid who just does a drawing, gives it to his doctor because he says, thank you for what you did for me. And he puts, the doctor puts it on the wall, and from that, this is going to be one heck of a movie.
You know, this happens all the time. You know, one of the famous stories in history is the fellow that invented the intermittent windshield wiper in his garage. He's just a regular guy. And the big auto companies, Ford, I think it was, I can't remember which one it was, had been trying, and all their giant scientists couldn't figure it out. So he went into him and he said, look, this is how you do it. And he got into a contract with them, and then they ended up ripping him off. They took his invention, and he ended up suing them and drove him insane doing it, sued them for years and years and years, and eventually won. But it is very, there's a lot of stories out there where people, just regular folk, have come up with the most amazing things only to have them taken away.
And exactly, and well, of course, that windshield wiper guy, 30 years, I think. It's heartbreaking to think what he
Ruined his life.
Yeah,
ruined his life. You know, and it was shown that he was the true inventor, and they did take it from him. But you know, they had all the money, and he didn't. There's a great movie out there. I think there's a book, and it's a really great movie. I forget the title of the movie, but it's worth watching if you can find that one.
Yeah, because that's what happens, and you have to be careful. That's why people should contact Larson & Larson, not just for intellectual property, but also for patent law, right?
Right.
Because
yeah, that's why you need lawyers, because, you know, had he come to me, let's say, and I'd seen that, I would immediately patent it, right, and got everything done and negotiated for him, but he was unsophisticated, and that's how these things happen. The folks that do go to lawyers and get their ducks in a row end up in a better place, usually with more money and less hassle. So I understand lawyers are expensive and it's confusing.
But it's worth it.
It's important, yeah. Because
look what happened. Here's an example. Scarlett Johansson. Now, she had lawyers, but she didn't have the right lawyers, because obviously they missed something.
No, not necessarily. I think that one's still up in the air. It's just in the beginning.
Yeah, it's in the beginning? Well, I don't know. That's why you have to, at the bottom of the hour, my next guest has written a book. It's called Constance, and it's by Matthew Fitzsimmons. And it's about cloning. It's about, you know, people being cloned in the future. It's set in 2036. And so it's a fascinating book. It's a real thriller. But when you're writing a contract today, there are a lot of things that you have to think about, lots of possibilities, including, my goodness, probably if people are cloned, who do the books belong to? Who, you know, it's strange, isn't it?
Yeah, and we have special contracts for these special types of intellectual property, and there's certain magic words that have to be in there. You know, the law has words where the regular person wouldn't understand what they mean, but in the law, that magic word has a special meaning, and if it's not in the contract, then you lose. And that's why you can't do it yourself, particularly in these types of difficult contracts, big movie deals, big industrial deals, patents, and big book deals, because you wouldn't know as just a regular person, an author, an inventor, that there are these very sophisticated rules and laws out there. And if you don't get it just right, then it's totally wrong.
And there are so many things to be you have to be careful about. And I was intrigued that, what's the name of the film? The Hangover. In The Hangover, one of them, I only saw part of it. There's somebody wakes up with a tattoo on their face, which at the time was based on the one from Tyson, the boxer had on his face.
Yeah.
And of course, who would guess, who would even think about that the tattoo artist would come along and sue because the studio was using his tattoo?
Yeah, and tattoos are considered art and they're copyrightable.
See, most people wouldn't think that, and I'm sure that this is the problem sometimes with, a lot of authors are buying their, their covers from overseas, well, they can get them cheap, for $5 they can get a cover.
And I do cases like this every week. I'm representing an author right now, and the author is having a private artist create the work for the cover, and I said there's just a very short one-page contract that needs to be signed that has the magic words in it, and then we have nothing to worry about. And I provided that to my client to have that signed before the contract was written for the purposes of creating the art and the payment of the money to the artist. And now my client is protected. My client owns that cover art, owns the copyright.
Exactly. That's what you have to do. You have to make sure.
It's a one-page contract. It's very simple. You can actually find them online. Just call it a copyright assignment.
And because you have to be careful nowadays. Well,
it has a couple of sentences with the magic words, and that's it. That's all you need. You don't need a 100-page contract for it to transfer the ownership of the copyright. And ownership and copyright means that you're the only person that can make copies in any way. So if you don't do that, if you pay an artist to create art for you that you're going to use on your book, and you don't get an assignment of the copyright, all you have done is bought that art for the purposes of putting it on your book. The artist can then go and resell it a million times any way they want, and you can't. So in addition to paying the artist for the art, you have to make sure that they assign or sell, transfer the copyright.
Because I know many authors who don't have that assignment because the artists are the graphic artists are saying, "Oh no, I don't. I do a lot of dogs, and I'm not going to let you have this dog." But
find another artist.
If that dog is the one that's on your cover, and people think of that dog as your dog, and you do, 10 books, and on 10 books that dog is yours. It is terrible if you don't have the right, and then you turn around and you find this artist has put that dog on, 50 different authors' books, right?
That was the Anna David problem, right? She had the cover art problem.
Well, no, her problem was bigger. Oh, that's fun. Yeah, she was a guest last week. No, her thing was she couldn't get the rights. The book was published 14 years ago. Because there was a change in publisher, and the one who did it, was fired. And anyway, and it's a major publisher. They just let this book disappear for 14 years. And for like the past 4 or 5 years, now that she's, developed a reputation as a writer, she wanted it back. But they wouldn't talk to her. They wouldn't let her have it. 5 or 6 years.
It appears that she did get it back, minus the cover art.
But here's the important thing. She was going to go ahead and publish it on Amazon herself. Without a release from them. She had waited and waited and waited, and she said, "I'm not waiting any longer. I'm going to publish it." So one day she was ready to push the button, and luckily, a few days later, the release came. Because once she pushed that button and the book went out there, she got a movie deal. Now, if she had done that without that release, they would have been all over her, correct?
Potentially, yeah, because then once they see that there's money, and you may have a stake in the claim, that's what gets people's interest. That's how you get lawsuits.
Exactly. So she waited, luckily, because she really was so frustrated. She said to me, "I was ready just to push the button, print it. I wanted people to read my book." And, now she has a movie deal. So I guess the publisher is... Perhaps realize
ending to that saga.
Yeah. So anyway, Bill, it's always so nice to have you on Joy on Paper, and my listeners really appreciated that. All of these little things click in their heads. At some point, something will come up, and they'll start saying, "Yeah, Bill Larson's right. We have to contact." So it's Bill Larson at Larson and Larson, and they can find you on the internet, and that's the best way I think to get in touch with you.
LarsonPatentLaw.com.
LarsonPatentLaw.com. And Bill handles everything, and he has wonderful, wonderful, wonderful patent lawyers, and they will take care of you. If you have an idea, like that windshield wiper, my goodness, something. Sometimes it's these little ideas that make big money, right?
you never know what's going to be the next great book, movie, invention.
Exactly.
The most simple things. So.
And take it from me.
Check out my website and do your research online. There's plenty of free information online at the Patent Office and Copyright Office, and Trademark Office websites. A lot of free information out there. So, take a look at that and know what you're doing before you jump both feet into the pool.
Okay. Well, Bill Larson, Larson Patent Law, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. It's been a joy to talk to you. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
Okay, we're going to go to commercial.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you ready to eliminate your home energy bill? Well, get ready to harness the sun. Go EHS, Effective Solar Solutions, by Efficient Home Services. With no upfront costs, you can save money on your utility bill and even eliminate your electric bill altogether with EHS Solar. Call EHS, the number one solar installer nationwide. We know how to customize your home. EHS handles every project in-house with no subcontractors. Remember, no upfront costs, tax breaks, and the best company in the business, Efficient Home Services. Schedule an appointment today at 727-353-3757. Visit our website and download your free buyer's guide to going solar at www.goehs.com. Go solar, go savings, go EHS. Call 727-353-3757 today to talk to our experts.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I am back with my next guest. Oh, this is fun. Oh boy, oh boy. It's a subject that interests me. I'm so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper, Matthew Fitzsimmons. Hi, Matthew.
Hi, how are you, Joy?
Oh, my name is Patsy with a Z.
Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry.
That's all right. Patsy with a Z. It's easy to remember. Okay. I put the zip in your life, okay? Tell me, do you like to be called Matthew or Matt?
Either one is just fine.
Matt.
Matt is good.
Matt is good. Okay. And the name of the book is Constance. And, oh boy, oh boy. I've been thinking a lot about this subject, actually, for a long time. In general, I haven't wanted any dystopian books. But this I don't think of as dystopian. This is a thriller. It's a thriller. And that's right off the bat. We should tell people this is a real thriller. And you are an expert at thrillers because I tell you, I loved Origami Man. I love that book. So we'll talk a little bit after, when we have time, we'll talk about the Gibson Vaughn series, which I know people can now buy in a 5-book package, which is fantastic. But today, because this new book just came out, Constance, And it's made quite a sensation. I think lots of people are talking about it and talking about the idea. Now, I never know how much to give away. So what do you want to tell people about this book? And then we'll talk about what some other things about it.
Well, it is sort of an interesting, I heard your, how to describe it is sort of been an interesting thing. A number of people called it dystopian, which surprised me. I didn't know I had written a dystopian novel until I was told that was what I had written. That wasn't really how I was thinking about it. It is essentially about a woman named Constance Darcy, Con Darcy, who has a human clone. It basically, the premise of the book is that there's a private company in the near future in the United States that offers backups in the event of tragedy, in the event that a client passes away unexpectedly. They have a clone of that person and a upload of that person's consciousness, and in the event of disaster, the clone is activated, and the person, in theory's life is able to continue despite dying. And using that premise, basically, I agree with you that I think it is a thriller and a mystery at heart. Basically, the premise of it, the idea I wanted to explore was, could I write a detective novel where the detective and the murder victim were the same person? And so essentially the clone of Con Darcy has to investigate and uncover what happened to the original Con Darcy. And everything sort of flows from that essential premise. It has a science fiction piece to it. It's set about 20 years in the future, but I think it's a pretty grounded, realistic view of what the future might look like. It's not spaceships and flying cars by any stretch of the imagination. It is a mystery at heart, as you said.
And a real thriller, because it is just a fascinating story. The whole, looking for your murderer is a great premise, and one that I understand that you came up with in the middle of the night, where many times people get great ideas in the middle of the night, right?
Yep. The trick is you got to, I thought of it just as I was falling asleep one night, and the trick is, as you learn, if you do this for long enough, is to get yourself back out of bed and write it down, because you will not remember it in the morning. You'll remember is that you had a good idea, but you won't be able to quite remember what it was.
Exactly. And yeah, I got the idea for Joy on Paper at 4 o'clock in the morning. So that's the name of the show, is Joy on Paper. Now, this is not, I have had some books about cloning that are very scientific. I mean, painfully sometimes scientific. They go into every little thing about cloning. Where did you get, on what basis did you work? How much research did you do into actually, will we have clones in 2036?
So I did a fair amount of research. I talked to some neuropsychologists at Johns Hopkins, and I talked to some computer people whose specialty is computer, and I just did research into sort of what the state of the technology is and what it could be. And I was less interested in the science of it, because obviously it doesn't exist, and I'm not a scientist. I was more interested in, if it did exist, how would people react to it? How well would it be accepted in culturally and legally and sort of societally? But the fact of the matter is that we do human cloning in this country every day. In the form of stem cell research, we duplicate human cells, we clone human cells all the time. What we don't do is make a person. And so that is sort of a legal, ethical, moral red line, if you will, over which we have not yet crossed, at least to my knowledge, but it could be done. And then the other piece is store mapping and storing human consciousness, and that at the moment cannot be done, but they are working on it. That is a field that is more developed than I had any idea when I started the project. So really the question is will those two things ever be able to be linked and achieve the quasi-science of the book? That I don't know. That's above my pay grade. But it's a fun thing to get to look at.
Well, they have not yet cloned humans that we know of, or if they have, they're keeping it secret.
Very quiet.
Very quietly, because they want to keep it to themselves, and because they'll just clone themselves over and over, I guess. We'll be stuck with them. But they've cloned a lot of animals.
They have. Barbara Streisand cloned her dog. We've obviously cloned Dolly the sheep. Cloning of animals is—it's all there. Like, there's no—it's no harder to clone a person than it would be to clone an animal. It really is just a question of why and would you do that? And I think it is more likely. It's a question of not if, but when someone finally.
Yes. Well, that. I mean, I. Personally, I think there are some people who think that they are so important to the world, and they think they have really big egos and really big bucks. They can afford it. I have a feeling there are a few of them out there, and perhaps on the West Coast that I can think of, who think that they are really so vital to the world that they will spend their billions to clone themselves.
That's entirely possible. And the interesting thing with science is that science is oftentimes does not concern itself with the ethics and the morality of something. It's more interested in can it do it than should it do it.
Well, that's proven, obviously, in some of the research that people have done in viruses. And not thinking about the repercussions of that kind of research. And so the question I'm sure you're going to be asked many times now that you're going to be associated with cloning, would you clone yourself?
I don't think so, at least not the way it is done. And at least, the way it's done in my book, I don't know that I would. I think I purposely made it sort of early days of the technology, that it's available, but that there are limitations and that there are drawbacks associated with it. And I don't know that I would clone myself in that way. Beyond that, there is something to be said for, death is an important part of life. Death may, I think there'd be, a lot has been written in fiction about the idea of immortality. Living forever, and would, as a species, we adapt well to that? Would boredom set in? Would ennui? Would without sort of the idea, without there being an end point to life, does life in fact have a purpose? Do we need to die in order to value what we have? And I don't know the answer to that. That's a sort of philosophical question.
So you wouldn't clone yourself right now? The whole question of cloning is, when they're cloning, are they starting you off as an embryo and then growing you so you actually would have to live a long time to see yourself, or you'd never see yourself at the same age, or if you can be cloned exactly as you are, or if you could pick a time, like, I'd like to clone myself when I was, I think, 20 years old. I would like to have cloned myself when I was 20. That was pretty
right.
Cool.
And that the book at this point does not allow that to happen.
Yeah.
That's outside the scope of it. So, no, would I want to be cloned back to the age I am right now? I don't know that I would.
I think that wouldn't be so much fun. I would Although I wouldn't, you know, maybe I would like to clone myself at even now, and then I could send one of myself. I could send one of myself here and one of myself there to different areas of the world or of business, and say, okay, you can do this better. I want to go to the War College. That's where I want to. One of my clones I'd send over to the War College because I could teach them a lot, and I would like that. But
you're also assuming that your clones would do what they're told.
Oh yeah, that's the problem. You know,
they might have thoughts of their own on this.
Oh, that's bad. Well, hope. Yeah, this is, well, that's why the book is intriguing. I mean, and the book keeps you turning the pages because you want to understand it. And you, once you get into the story, because in the end it is a thriller, it's like any thriller. It captures you and you're sort of flowing along. You want to know, you want the solution. And at the same time, all books that are successful, you have to care about the character. And I think with Constance, you've created a character that people will find intriguing and care about.
I hope so. I certainly came to, you know, she's a real favorite of mine. So hopefully other people will have the same reaction to her.
So
that's what any author hopes for.
Yeah, exactly. And you've built up a fascinating story with a lot of twists and turns, which is just what a great thriller needs.
Thank you. I hope so.
And you know, I that's the problem. I never like to give away, you know, the thing. For me, reading is my biggest joy, is the reveal as I'm turning the pages and I'm learning more and I'm getting into the character and really, you know, enjoying it, enjoying the process. I don't like people to tell me, well, they're going to do this or they're going to do that. But there are lots of fascinating areas and about people who perhaps shouldn't have been cloned and people who wanted to be cloned and all of that. So it's really designed a very interesting story.
Thank you so much. Yeah, you know, the world building for it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's what I there's a lot of world building here because it's, you know, this time is 2036 and you have some still some elements of today's problems, you know, involved in that too, and looking at what the world might look like in 20 years. Although, you know, 2 years ago, who knew what the world would look like today?
No, absolutely. I mean, anyone who says they can predict the future is, it's such a chaotic, complex, so many moving pieces, and you just don't. You can guess at it, but the number of science fiction stories that have tried to guess at the future, and generally, they are very wide of the mark. For one reason or another.
So you were working on this during the pandemic year?
Well, I came up with the idea actually 3 or 4 years ago while I was in the middle of the Gibson Vaughn books and sort of made my notes and got my ideas down and put it aside. And I started the actual writing of it probably 6 months before the pandemic. You know, I remember I was in the middle of writing it when news out of China started, and then there were the airplanes in Seattle, and then New York started to have problems. And so that was all happening while I was writing it, and then of course everything locked down, in that as spring arrived. So it was a strange and difficult backdrop to try and focus and concentrate.
And it's not such an easy time now to be coming out with a book. You can't do the normal book tours and all of that stuff that you would have been doing. But you're doing like Zoom events and stuff like that.
That's right.
Okay.
It's a brave new world.
Exactly. Do you have a website you want people to go to?
Certainly. My website is my name, my full name, www.matthewfitzsimmons.com. And anything more than you could possibly want to know about me is probably on the thing.
And probably the events. And while they're there, they really, really must check out. I don't know why I haven't had you on, because somehow your publicity agent missed me, because you should have been on a long time ago, because I love the Gibson Vaughn series. It is a absolutely terrific series. And I read I've read all of them, actually. I didn't buy them in this nice collection that they now have, it all five books all together, because I really like the character. And first of all, I love the title. The minute, it's probably one of my favorite titles, because my sister does origami. She's really brilliant at it, and she loves origami. And I knew the minute I got that book, I showed it to her. She's like, I have to read it, because she loves it. But I love the character. He's Gibson Vaughn is a former Marine, and he's a hacker and also sort of wanted fugitive sometimes. Do you want to just give a few minutes about Gibson Vaughn?
I would love to. So Gibson Vaughn was where I got my start. The first one is called The Short Drop, and there are five books in the series. And you know, it's present day. It's sort of a more traditional mystery thriller arc. And essentially, what I wanted to do was, you know, as you said, Gibson Vaughn is a hacker, and I had realized that I'd never seen anyone portray computers or hacking realistically. They were always sort of trying to make it faster and fancier and more frenetic than it actually is, and I thought it would be neat to look at the art of computer hacking, if you will, because at the end of the day, all he really is a con artist.
Yeah,
and a confidence man. Is that it? You know, hacking calls it social engineering, which is the art of tricking you into giving up something that you shouldn't.
Well, I think it's a great series, and as I said, people can go there, and they can start at book one and work their way, and Origami Man is my favorite, but there's five books in that series, and so they can go to your website, Matthew Fitzsimmons, and I noticed you spelled Fitzsimmons a proper British way with the S capitalized, which I like.
Ma'am.
Because I lived in England quite a few years, and I knew a Fitzsimmons, and well, he would have just died if somebody ever didn't capitalize that S. So I think it's wonderful.
Thank you so much.
Okay, well, it's been a joy to talk to you, and I there's going to be a book 2 in Constance, right?
There is going to be a book 2.
Okay, well, then you'll be back here for book 2 of Constance, and we can talk more about her, and also we'll talk more about Gibson Vaughn, okay?
I would love that, Patsy. Thank you so much for having me on.
Okay, thank you so much for joining me. Bye-bye now, Matthew.
Bye-bye.
Okay, now, you know, I was so busy, and I'm so crazy. Let's play, did we play? Let's have... the Orange Sox promo. You taped it. Oh, Jim Lamb's book promo.
Yeah, folks, if you can hang on a second, okay. Ed's going to pull that up just a second.
Okay, thank you. It's been a crazy day. Wonderful having Bill Larson on. I'm sorry about that. Oh no. Okay. Anyway, we're going to play that in a minute. And just remember, again, what I tell you, you know, people, this is coming up, NaNoWriMo. Can you believe? You have 1 month. It's going to be October. And then you have 1 month. October is a month to think about your novel. And here comes... Do we have it? Okay, here we go.
Mark Twain said, if you see an adverb, kill it. Elmore Leonard said, using adverbs is a mortal sin. And I can't even repeat what Stephen King said, the horror. An adverb is a part of speech that when used right is heavenly, but when used too often, yuck. Hi, I'm Jim Lamb. Let's get started. There was a popular TV show for kids back in the 70s called Schoolhouse Rock. I loved it. Schoolhouse Rock covered a variety of topics, including grammar, science, history, and math. My favorite episode was about adverbs. It went like this. Lolly, 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 get your adverbs here. Got a lot of lolly jolly adverbs here. The lively little tune explained that an adverb is a word that modifies a verb. It can also modify an adjective, another adverb, or even a group of words. The lolly song claimed that an adverb was positively very, very necessary. There's just one problem. It's not necessary, that is. Why? Because some writers overuse adverbs. Others don't know how to use them. And some writers use adverbs to add to their word count without adding any value. And that's a very, 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 very wrong thing to do. However, when used wisely, an adverb can clarify. For example, take this sentence. The painter painted the house. Makes sense, doesn't it? Now let's add an adverb. The painter painted the house neatly. Notice how the adverb clarifies what kind of job the painter did? Another nice thing about adverbs is how quick you can make one. Quick becomes quickly by simply adding an ly. Slow becomes slowly. Neat is transformed into neatly. And remember, an adverb can modify or qualify, and in doing so express a relationship in terms of time, space, circumstance, manner, cause, or degree. For example, consider the following. I felt the movie ended abruptly. Aunt Jenny's teacup must be handled gently. My neighbor answered the survey truthfully. Here's some context. Carefully, correctly, and easily are adverbs of manner. Adverbs of place, here, there, outside. Adverbs of time, early, soon, tomorrow. Adverbs of frequency, always, daily, seldom. So remember, use adverbs thoughtfully, carefully, but with restraint. I'm Jim Lamb, and you just learned a little something-something about adverbs.
Okay. Well, thank you, Jim, and now we're going to play your book promo. This is for Jim Lamb's wonderful book about his time in Vietnam.
50 years ago, Jim Lamb left Vietnam after serving in the Navy, where he fixed radios, played ping pong, and swept floors. Jim wrote about his time in the service in Orange Socks and Other Colorful Tales, the story of how he survived Vietnam and kept a sense of humor. The book is available on Amazon. Just type in Orange Socks and Other Colorful Tales. You can also visit his website at www.jslstories.com.
Okay, thank you. Thanks. This is for Jim Lamb. He's such a wonderful, wonderful, one of my biggest fans. Isn't that wonderful? Thank you so much, Jim, and we're always happy to promote your book. I'm running out of time, so I'm just going to say, everybody, start thinking about NaNoWriMo 1 month to come up with a story idea. And then say something nice to somebody today, and I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Big Ed. And he saluted me, I saluted him, and pretty soon I think I'm going to become a general and head to the War College, and perhaps I can teach them a few lessons. Bye-bye now.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.3
WZHR Zephyr Hills
FM 104.3
Listen.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Rocket Mortgage. I'm Steve Kathan. It's a key day in Washington with a lot at stake for the Biden White House.
Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer says, first up, good news.
Today, the Senate will pass a continuing resolution that will eliminate the possibility of a government shutdown tonight.
Minority Leader Mitch McConnell agrees.
Overall, this is an encouraging progress.
Once the Senate passes the funding bill, it goes to the House, where Speaker Nancy Pelosi says,
we will pass and send on to the president to keep government open.
Then the House tackles the infrastructure bill, which Pelosi's feeling hopeful about as well.
Think positively.
Stacey Lynn, CBS News, Washington.
Facebook under fire as senators investigate the mental health issues suffered by teens on Instagram. Facebook's Antigone Davis says the company is trying to give adults more control.
We'll continue our work to allow parents to oversee their children's accounts by offering these tools to teen accounts on Instagram. These new features, which parents and teens can opt into, will give parents tools to meaningfully shape their teens' experience.
Women in Congress who've had abortions are sharing personal stories at a hearing about new state laws restricting the procedure. Missouri Democrat Cori Bush says a teen pregnancy occurred after she was sexually assaulted on a church trip.
During my first visit, I found out that I was nine weeks pregnant, and then there the panic set in. How could I make this pregnancy work? How could I, at 18 years old and barely scraping by, support a child on my own?
One student critically injured today in an elementary school shooting in Memphis. Police are searching for a suspect. A group representing school board members around the country is asking for federal help to stop threats that have been made over mask mandates, calling it a form of domestic terrorism. And when it comes to vaccine mandates, CBS's Errol Barnett says there could be turbulence ahead.
Pilot unions are warning that staff shortages could scramble family vacations when the federal vaccine mandate takes effect.
In fact, the pilots who are not vaccinated are put on unpaid leave or terminated. More than 4,000 pilots at American Airlines will not be able to fly.
Captain Dennis Tager is spokesperson for the Allied Pilots Association and its 15,000 American Airlines pilots. Its vaccination rate is higher than the national average, but Tager says that leaves over 4,000 of their pilots holding out.
If indeed the executive order for the mandate on vaccines hits, it'll hit right in the December timeframe.
Setback on Broadway, the show Aladdin canceled its show last night because of a COVID outbreak among performers. Wall Street, the Dow is down 338. This is CBS News.
This hour's newscast is presented by Rocket Mortgage. Need to know what it takes for a home loan to fit your budget and your family? Rocket can.
Now it's time for the Only in America Minute, sponsored by MyPillow. Go to MyPillow.com and use promo code Bill. Here's your host, Bill Cochran.
Well, in government we trust. The new governor up in New York, I mean, she is really out of control. I mean, she says that God told her to tell you and me and all the other Americans, and maybe all the people in the world, to get a vaccination so Pfizer can make billions and billions and billions dollars more. I mean, does it make any sense that she's going to let all those people go and bring the National Guard into the hospitals? Can you imagine the guard pulling up in the tank and going into the hospital bedrooms and trying to make people better like the nurses did? It's not going to happen, but this governor, a lot like Cuomo, maybe worse, not sure, but think about it.
Hi, this is Patty from Soap This. I just want to announce we have our next event December 4th. It's Young and the Restless Actors, plus Jacob Young, who used to be on Bold and Beautiful. The actors are Jordi Villasuso, Sean Dominic, and Jacob Young. To get tickets, you go to soapthis.ticketleap.com. The event is December 4th, and come and have a great time and meet these great actors. Again, soapthis.ticketleap.com.
Hey everybody, this is Pastor Marcia McAllister from Beacon of Hope Ministries. We want you to join us on Sunday afternoons at 3 o'clock on this radio station for our two-hour show, talking to you about the Word of God, giving you great contemporary music, some lively chat, and just some food for thought. You'll be encouraged to know how very much God loves you and how He has a plan for your life. Join us this coming Sunday at 3 o'clock on Living the Good Life.
Hi, this is Paul Molloy, inviting you to join me every Monday, Tuesday, and Friday for Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time here on the Tantalk Radio Network. On each show, we interview business and political experts, all with the idea of promoting as much individual freedom as we can get. So won't you join and listen in every Monday, Tuesday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time for Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show, right here on the Tantalk Radio Network.
Tune in Saturdays from 3 to 5 p.m. for Miss Sarah's Dynamic Gospel Power Show. That's 2 hours of great gospel music every Saturday from 3 to 5 p.m., all brought to you by the Ozona Pig Restaurant in Ozona. Yes, that's every Saturday from 3 to 5 p.m. It's Miss Sarah's Dynamic Gospel Power Show. Tune in on the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Chris Steiner, host of Liberation Station Radio Show, to say here's to your health, personally, economically, and ecologically. Teaching the news others lose proves that's what you can truly use, bringing you credentialed and degreed authorities, accomplished activists, the news-making pioneers who change the course of conversations for the better, and who you might be surprised to find are often among the majority. It's not much of a talk show, more of a do show. Liberation Station Radio Show, Tuesdays 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, theliberationstation.com.
The Brian Cash Closed Coupon Book is giving out free masks. Just call 727-804-6082. If you need a mask, we'll get it to you for free. There's our donation back to the community. The Brian Cash Closed Coupon Book. Free masks. 727-804.